Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rehabilitating Your Portfolio, a podcast about how to protect capital while still capturing the upside. And now, here's your host, Brett Rosenthal.
Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Brett Rosenthal, and we are going to explore all aspects of rehabilitating your investment portfolio. Now, this is a live trading desk, so you may hear some phones ring. It's in the middle of the day here. It's around almost 11 o'clock Monday morning. And we are actively managing capital on the desk as I'm doing this show. So what we're going to do is take real life examples, and we're going to share with you during the show and every other show tools that we use to rehabilitate struggling investment portfolios. And the focus of what we do here is we focus on protecting capital first, but being able to capture upside when the opportunity presents itself. So let's get started. The first step that we take on the trading desk each morning, and we're going to, like I said, do this with you each morning, is look at our institutional proprietary algorithms that direct our investing approach. And I would suggest you listen to our first radio show so you get an idea of, you know, why we center our business on algorithms. I'm not going to go over it every show, but to try to, you know, put it into one or two sentences. Post 2008, there's been a new investing climate, and that climate requires new tools to protect your capital but still capture upside. Using tools like valuations and PEs and all these other things to make decisions is not as effective in the world we live in today as it used to be. And what we're going to talk about after we go over the setups today of our algorithms and what they're telling us about market direction and how it affects our portfolio management, we're going to talk today about the number one issue in the market that investors must focus on, must understand if they're going to be successful managing their own capital, or, you know, if someone's managing their capital, make sure that the person you're working with is aware of this one simple fact. There is one reason why equity markets go up and down. I know that sounds crazy. Wall Street Journal and CNBC would never want you to know that secret, because they couldn't create papers and shows about one particular topic all the time. But I'm telling you, there is only one thing you have to follow and understand if you're going to protect your capital and still make it grow in the world we live in today. It's not all the myriad of things they like to try to confuse you with on financial shows. And I'm going to share that with you in a minute. But let's get to our algorithms. We have built algorithms, and I've been doing this, you know, algorithmic research really since I got in the business almost 30 years ago. It's been a passion of mine, and in the last 5 years we've been taking all of that data and turning it into real actionable algorithms from which we can manage capital. So this is a bit of a labor of love for me. Thousands of lines of code and a lot of revisions and a lot of optimizations. But we have focused, we think of investing as a pyramid, okay? And at the very top of the pyramid is the four big indexes that drive the market's overall direction. It's the S&P 500, it's the NASDAQ 100, it's the small cap, Russell Small Cap Index, and it's the long-dated U.S. Government treasuries, which in these cases we've built algorithms designed to invest slash trade, depending on how you want to approach it, the exchange-traded funds of these big indexes. So whenever I discuss the indexes or we go further down the pyramid into deeper investment structures, we're always talking about exchange-traded funds. unless I specifically discuss an individual stock with you. So people have asked me before, and so I'll just clear the air right here. We do not bother trading or investing in the Dow Jones. The Dow Jones is 30 stocks, and 30 stocks is not really for us a good tool to judge directions of the market. We want something that has more assets involved, more liquidity, a broader approach to understanding markets. And so you have the S&P 500, or you have 100 stocks, the NASDAQ 100, which is technology-based primarily, and then you've got the Russell Small Cap Index of 600 stocks, or sometimes 2,000 stocks, depending on which index you look at, and that's heavily geared towards financials and smaller cap financials. 25%+ of that Russell Index are small cap banks, so it's very financially oriented. And then, of course, 30-year treasuries, 20+-year treasuries, that's a huge market, so it really helps us. And then when we go down that pyramid, we start with those big four. We have algorithms designed for the volatility of each of those indexes, and it's a dynamic design so that it learns and grows depending on the type of market we have. So if volatility is scrunched and we have very small trading ranges, our algorithms adapt. When we have very wide trading ranges, again, the algorithms readjust. And so what we do first in the morning, we come in this morning and we say, okay, what are our four major algorithms telling us today? And so we look back, okay, at the S&P. The S&P, we got long the S&P based on our algorithms on the 12th of July, and we are still long that asset. We have a myriad of different exit points that that tell us when risk is elevated, and we then adjust portfolios accordingly. So when I say we are long the S&P, you could do that. You could literally just put 100% of your portfolio long the S&P, go buy SPY, boom, and follow the strategy. It's a very successful strategy. But that's a very conservative strategy if you just buy the S&P. There are other ways to flesh out the portfolio. So then we skip over to, and so just to tell you, we are still long the S&P, even though we have what we call a profit protection exit a couple of days ago. And that just tells us that risk is elevated as of the 2nd of August. And so depending on the portfolio that we're managing, based on someone's particular risk tolerance, you're going to adjust the portfolio accordingly. Then we skip over to the NASDAQ 100. We see that we were long, got long that index based on the algorithm on the 10th of July. We've reached our primary target, which is a statistical, again, part of the algorithm, which basically says on a probability standpoint, you've gotten the most you're going to get out of this particular move in the NASDAQ 100 before some sort of a correction sets in. Sometimes a correction can be a week. Sometimes a correction lasts a couple of months. So, and we just don't know. But when we get to that price point, we say, okay, risk is definitely elevated. And what we saw actually was on the 27th of July was that big down, morning or, hour actually for the NASDAQ 100. It made all-time new highs, and then over a two-hour period, dropped about 2%. So it basically broke out above our primary target and then collapsed back below it, which is not a surprise. That's usually from a, like I said, probability and statistical standpoint, we've reached an area where risk is going to be elevated and it's going to be harder to make money. But we are still long the index. And then we get over to the small cap index. We were long that index back on the 13th of July. We had a profit protection exit back on the 27th of July. And if you follow our Twitter feed, we kind of give live updates on how it affects our portfolio. On the 27th, we made the determination after that day it was time to really exit small cap positions for conservative portfolios and shift the attention or exposure to the S&P. And that's, you know, again, it depends on your risk tolerance. It depends on how aggressive you want to be when it comes to protecting capital. But for us, and, you know, for my own personal capital, I'll tell you that on that day, I just moved out of the small cap index. Now, our algorithm wasn't out yet, but the structure of the advance and the type of profit protection exit told me I don't need that amount of risk in my portfolio at this stage, and I'd rather focus on the S&P. So I actually had more capital in the S&P. I added more capital to the S&P, and I took all my capital out of the small cap index. That's just me, though. It depends on who you are. It's not a recommendation for you. I wouldn't know who you are and what your objectives are. Anyway, so a couple days later, after that profit protection exit, our strategy actually exited completely the small cap arena. Okay, and that was on the 2nd of August. So be advised, we're no longer, based on our algorithms, long any small cap assets. And then we switch over to the Treasury Index. Now, we got long Treasuries on the 2nd of August, had a big up move the next day. Then we had the employment number, which reversed that trade back down to where we bought the asset. And we're in a holding pattern. So we're trading right around where we bought the asset to begin with. TLT is the symbol that I'm talking about. Our stop is not too far away. You know, what we've noticed in our strategies after doing the work for 30 years and building it for 5, is that really once we take a position, if we don't make money quickly out of the gate, and if the asset goes below of the day that we've entered the position, we generally are raising capital and reassessing our investment. So right now we're close to our stop, and we're going to see how it progresses from here. But that's the structure right now. So how do you use that in a portfolio on your own? Let me just say a couple of things. We take that big picture. We say, okay, we're long still the S&P. We're long the triple Qs. We're no longer long small caps, and we're long treasuries. Okay. Now we go down the pyramid, and we say, which groups do we want to focus on in this market right here at these prices? And at the moment, we're long the financial stocks at the moment, which is kind of interesting. To be long treasuries and financials at the same time is usually something has to give. One of those two entries is going to be right and one's going to be wrong. We just don't know which it's going to be yet. Usually they go in opposite directions, so you're not going to be long treasuries and financials at the same time. And the reason for that is when treasuries go up, rates go down. Okay, when rates go down, banks have a harder time making money. So the algorithm world we live in, you have to understand that's the world we're in. Algorithms are driving markets today. So in that world, when you get rates going down, generally speaking, over the short term, intermediate term, depending on how long rates go down, over the long term, you'll see financial stocks suffer. So at the moment, we're long both, which, you know, we're kind of on the edge of our seat seeing which direction we're really going to be able to make money in. But so we go down that pyramid and we say, okay, which groups do we want to be long? And then at the bottom of the pyramid are individual stocks. So the way you can use this information in your own portfolio is you can understand, first of all, that 3 out of 4 stocks follow the market. That's just a fact since the dawn of time. So if the overall algorithms are 100% cash, the risk to a portfolio is enormous, and it's best to be in a defensive mode. If all the equity algorithms are long at the same time, there's your window of opportunity, and that's when you start lacing in your favorite individual stocks if you'd like to be an individual stock owner instead of an ETF owner. Totally makes sense. You have a list of your favorite names. And the algorithms say, okay, the window's open. That's when you start putting the portfolio to work for you. And then, you know, in other shows we'll discuss risk management and, you know, how you want to handle positions. Because if you step into positions, individual names, and they're making you a lot of money, even if the algorithms change, you don't have to immediately sell your stocks. What you need is an individualized approach to protecting capital on that individual stock. That's one way to go about it. You know, it depends on really your time horizon and risk tolerance. But so that's where we are today. Let's just to finish up what we're saying on our algorithms are, yes, it's okay to be long your big cap names. Yes, you know, the NASDAQ 100, we're still long. The small cap stocks, we're no longer long, so risk is definitely elevated. Very often, small caps are the canary in the coal mine in a market. You know, there's not a lot of support for small cap names. There's a lot of support for big cap names. I'm going to get to that in a minute. I'm going to tell you the number one issue you need to follow as an investor. There's just one thing you got to follow and understand. The rest is noise. One thing. I'm going to share that in a minute. But it kind of ties into what I'm saying right now. Big cap names are still in favor, and that's where the safety is. Small cap names are out of favor, and so we're out of that. And I say it's a canary in the coal mine because small cap names tend to go down before the rest of the market does because no one really supports them. There's no big institutional support of small cap names. There's no central bank support of small cap names. Okay? So it's a good guide that when small caps are breaking down, you want to start looking at your portfolio and saying, where should I be protecting capital? What investment has not been working? Let's raise cash there. What investment has been working? Maybe I should raise my stops. I don't want to give it all away. And that's part of rehabilitating your portfolio. It's a new discipline of how to manage money. Right now, it's a very frustrating market where you get some good gains, you think things are going well, and in like a three, four, five-day period, it's all wiped out. You have to manage your assets differently in an algorithm-driven world. But anyway, so I hope that helps you out a little bit. That's how we're approaching the day-to-day. We've got our big cap names. We're looking honestly from a hedge standpoint. We'll be shorting the small cap index if our algorithms give us the opportunity to do that. And in the meantime, you know, the market's been incredibly, incredibly tight. The volatility is really unprecedented from a tightness standpoint. I think this is the 12th day in a row on the S&P where it hasn't traded hasn't closed up or down more than 0.33%. That's the tightest range since 1927 for a 12-day period. It's unbelievable. So the old adage there was, you know, you never short a quiet market. That's the old adage. We'll see if that still works in today's post-2008 world. But generally speaking, you don't short an incredibly boring market because it tends to break out to the upside. And I think the reason for that is you just shorts get tired and all of a sudden they decide to cover at the same time because some piece of news hits the market. And, you know, next thing you know, the market pops 1 or 2%. So I would say the bias is still to the upside on the big indexes, but you've got the breakdown in the small caps, so beware. Now I'm going to share with you, before we wrap up here, the number one focus an investor has to have on understanding the direction of markets. This is not day-to-day, intraday direction. I'm talking about the big picture direction. Do markets continue to go higher? Do they break down from here? You know, there's an extreme amount of noise right now. Everywhere I look on financial networks, financial publications, financial blogs, Twitter streams, there's just huge, desire, it seems, to try to call the top in this market. And everybody's talking about valuations and how unbelievably high they are and blah, blah, blah. Okay? That's completely getting you, the investor, away from the number one issue you need to focus on. Okay? I'm going to share it for you right now. Grab a pen, piece of paper. You might want to write this down. Put it above your desk. Okay? Markets go up and down based on liquidity. Markets go up and down based on central bank liquidity. That is it, my friends. This is a post-2008 world. This is a world of negative interest rates in areas of the Western Hemisphere. Actually, let's go over all the way to Japan, right? Negative interest rates. Think about that. Think about that. Post-2008, before 2008, nobody had ever heard of a negative interest rate, okay, on a government bond. Forget it. Negative interest rates, okay? If you think valuations are still the way to determine whether or not the market goes up or down, look, I'm sorry to say, you're dreaming. Will the market go down at some point? Absolutely, but it won't be because someone points to this PE ratio is too high. This market's overvalued. This market's been overvalued for months, people. You could say for years. The market will go down. You ready for this? Here's a prediction for you. The market will go down when central banks begin reducing liquidity. Right now, you want to know why, and this is what's been driving me crazy for the last couple of weeks. All I hear is, for all of 2017, the market's up because everyone loves Trump, and everyone thinks President Trump's going to do X, Y, and Z, and so the market's discounting, you know, all these great things Trump's going to do, and that's why the market's up, okay? That's the prevailing wisdom. Okay, it's wrong wisdom, okay? It's completely wrong. Now, I'm not saying it didn't get started because of that. Hey, Trump won. That caught a lot of investors off guard. Nobody really expected that. And so there was some, you know, movement in financial stocks because there'd be deregulation and all these things. Sure, sure. At the beginning, that's definitely true. That was the match, if you will. Okay? That was the spark that lit the fire. But the reason the market's up big in 2017 has zero to do with Donald Trump. And everything to do with the fact that Western central banks, we're talking about the ECB, European Central Bank, the Bank of England, the BOE, okay? Talking about the Bank of Japan, BOJ. We're talking about the Bank of Switzerland. I mean, there's about eight of them, okay? They have been adding liquidity to the system at an alarming rate since the start of 2017, and even in 2016, at the end of 2016. We're talking about the equivalent of $200 billion plus a month. And this can all get confusing, but let's break it down for you, make it easy and bite-sized pieces for us to understand, okay? When I say central banks adding liquidity, what does that mean? It means quite literally, let's just take as an example the Central Bank of Switzerland. They create more currency, which they can do with a couple clicks of a mouse. Okay, they create currency. There's nothing stopping central banks from just creating currency literally out of thin air. Okay, and then they take that capital and they invest it in different assets. When it comes to the Bank of Switzerland, they've been buying shares of U.S. equities. In fact, the Bank of Switzerland is the largest public owner of Facebook right now. You want to know why Facebook stock is up? You think it has to do with earnings or valuation? Or does it have to do with the fact that a buyer has unlimited resources, can create as much capital as they want, and they're buying things like Facebook? What do you think matters more, the earnings of Facebook or the fact that a bank, a central bank now, we're not talking about private banks, central bank can create as much liquidity as it wants, as much currency as it wants, and it's converting that currency into shares of Facebook. Now maybe you see why I say this is the only aspect that you need to grasp and understand, and you better make sure that your investment advisor, your broker, gets what I'm saying. Because if they don't, they're going to completely miss the turn. Or worse, they're already missing the turn, right? They're already missing the upside, and they're contrarians because they keep telling you, we need to be short, or we need to be in, you know, these assets because the valuations are low. And that's not what drives the market today. It used to. I understand why people still focus on it, because it used to. Pre-2008, all those things mattered. Right now, it doesn't matter. I'm going to throw another statistic at you just to solidify this point. This is the one that really blows my mind. The Facebook piece is interesting, but listen to this. The Central Bank of Europe, the European Central Bank, the ECB, has been printing euros and buying up European junk bonds. Central Bank of Europe is creating currency, euros, and supporting their own junk bond market. Not, by the way, not government bonds, right? These are corporate junk bonds. Junk bonds meaning that the corporations are considered in, you know, more dire straits than quality companies, right? So a lot of these companies might go bankrupt, and so therefore their bonds are considered junk, right? Junk rating, junk credit rating. Central bank is buying junk bonds of private companies in Europe. And these junk bonds now, as a whole, if you look at the index, yield, wait for it, pause for effect, less than U.S. 30-year treasuries. Just let that sink in for a minute. European junk bonds yield less than U.S. 30-year treasuries. In other words, the market is telling you that it's safer to invest in a private company in Europe that's considered junk than it is in 30-year U.S. treasuries. Does that make any sense to you? Would that make any sense in any world other than the one post-2008? How do we get to that situation? Well, simple. A buyer with unlimited resources is buying up a finite asset and driving yields to a point that make absolutely no sense. Now, guess what? If you were using a valuation matrix, you would have been shorting European junk bonds for months now, and you would be out of a job. You would be broke. And you'd be crying all the way to the poorhouse saying, how could I be wrong? The valuations were ridiculous. That's right. And they got more and more and more and more ridiculous, because the Central Bank of Europe was buying the bonds. So you can't fight the central banks. So I leave you with this thought today. Please remember this. When you're watching Fox Business News, or you're watching CNBC, or any other you know, channel that brings on investment advisors or whomever that tell you valuations are this and the market's going to do that, if they're not addressing the liquidity issue, they are completely wasting your time. Just turn the channel. What we need to focus on as investors now in the world we live in is what central banks are doing. Are they adding liquidity, or are they reducing liquidity? That's a hard thing to know, so we'll have to focus on that tomorrow. Our time is up for today, and I will come back at you tomorrow, and we'll pick up where we left off and discuss how do we deal with a world where central bank intervention drives market direction. Hope you all have a good day trading, investing, and protecting your capital, but still capturing upside. Take care.